VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It is Saturday morning. It is 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour, and I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live and in person. You stare at the left side of your radio dial, you'll see Adam. Right side is me, and somewhere way off in the distance is Alan. And we're all ready and willing and excited to talk to anybody out there who would like to call in and ask a question or make a comment. And that's easily done at 904-222-8255. 55222 talk. And as always, we'd like to welcome back all the regulars. It's the reason we get up every Saturday morning and do this, because we know you folks are always out there. And if you're new because you've heard about it, or somebody just happens to be driving by with this particular radio on and you hear it, stick around for a while. I will promise you little in life, but one thing I will promise you is that you will learn something somehow by listening to the show. And I don't usually think it'll be useless information, although I do have some of that, and I'm perfectly willing to share it with you.
No doubt about that.
No doubt about it. Anyway, we will have, as always, a trivia question and just all kinds of topics today. It is an interesting time to be alive and an investor.
It is.
And it became a little bit more interesting this week.
It did. That pesky recession just won't hurry up and get here.
I beg it. Hurry. But just won't do it.
Despite that, the Fed still apparently thinks that July seems like the right time for an interest rate cut. No matter how many times I've told Powell that we don't need it, he won't listen. Yep. He's going to do it.
The market's sure looks
pricing
that way.
It in at 100%. Yep. I just, at this point, after his speech this week, it just sounds like it's inevitable.
Well, you know, he complains because Trump wants rates lowered. And then he knows, as well as you know and I know, that we don't need one, don't want one. There's reasons not to do it, outnumber the reasons to do it. But he is yielding to the political pressure and the stock market, which makes me wonder how much money he's got in the market.
I don't know, but that's a good question. Well, you know,
when Greenspan was in there, he had, in his disclosure form, he had somewhere around $4 million worth of treasuries. And he kept keeping rates high. And I often wondered if that wasn't a little bit of a conflict of interest.
It definitely could be.
Yes, it could.
With all the Fed chairs, there's a lot of potential conflicts of interest.
Yep. Which is just added on to the long list of reasons why the Fed should be gotten rid of, never should have started in the first place. It's too late for that. But we should just get rid of it. But I digress. Back to the market. That's much more fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
This week.
Because of that, we saw three new all-time highs or new all-time highs on all three indexes. We saw more than three new all-time highs this week. We saw several consecutive new all-time highs.
Milestones.
The Dow finished the week over 27,000 for the first time, gaining 1.5%. More importantly, though, the S&P finished the week well over 3,000, up 0.8%. The NASDAQ didn't have an important milestone cross this week, but it still posted a really solid gain to end under just under 8,250. The S&P and the NASDAQ are now both up more than 20% this year. One interesting thing about this week, it felt better than it was, and a lot of that was due to you saw the large cap index, the Dow, go up and up and up, but small and mid caps did not participate in that huge rally. So if you are diversified and not just invested in the Dow or the DIA or one of those type of things, you probably didn't see your account perform as well as the Dow did this week. So don't worry, that happens once in a while. It's just one of those things.
That is the classic symptom called under-diversification. It is possible to become very wealthy by under-diversifying. Yeah. It is not, however, possible to stay very wealthy by under-diversifying.
If you listen to the show, you know that my personal feeling is that the Dow is the absolute worst measure of the economy or the market, but it's the one that's most widely used. And so many times when the Dow diverges from the other indexes, people wonder why their portfolio isn't going up as much as 300 points on the Dow goes up. And the reason for that is that's 30 stocks. That's it. That's all it is. And it's a price-weighted index. It's a stupid measure. I really hate it. So just don't pay attention to it. Look at the S&P, or even better, look at the Wilshire 5000. But I know no one can ever find that one posted on any news station. So, oh well.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, you do what you can.
There was some good news underlying those numbers, though. The transports and the semiconductors finally turned around their short slide that they've been on. And that bodes well for the overall market. So I did like seeing that. Transports in particular. We saw a really nice development in the bond market this week as well. The yield curve steepened and returned to a non-inverted state after quite some time being inverted.
Oh, ye of little faith.
But that doesn't mean that the inversion didn't take place. It still took place, so you have to be careful about that.
Gone and forgotten.
This was not good news for bond prices, though, and that was apparent in long treasuries, which dropped almost 2% in value this week alone. However, they're still up 8% this year, so not all is lost. Commodities had a nice week. Natural gas reversed its 2019 slide and gained over 6%. Oil also added to its gains for the years, and it pushed the commodities index higher by about 2%. So pretty nice gains if you're a commodities investor.
I noticed.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. International stocks were mixed this week. Brazil posted one of the largest gains at almost 7%. Their market is pretty much on pace with the U.S. market this year, gains around 25%. Russia had a mild week, but it is up almost 28% year to date. It's the highest one that I could find in a quick search.
You know, and maybe Trump caused it.
I'm sure it's somehow his fault.
Maybe that's good publicity. Everybody running around calling Russia, Russia, Russia.
Two other markets that are up pretty big this year that I would not have picked are the Italian and the Canadian markets. They're both up more than 22% year to date. Some others that are not quite as surprising, Australia, Hong Kong, up more than 18%. And then France, of all places, is up 18%. I'm not sure why.
Partly because they were so beaten up.
Or perhaps the World Cup boosted their economy.
That didn't hurt.
No, I'm sure it didn't. With the start of a new quarter, companies are starting to report their second quarter earnings, and this kicks off what we call earnings season. We really start ramping up earnings reports next week, but we did see a few companies report already, including Pepsi, Kraft Heinz, and Delta, so some pretty big names. Heading into this season, analysts have been cutting forecasts like crazy, which is usually a good sign that many companies will beat lowered expectations. Some analysts are predicting that we are already in a so-called earnings recession, which would mean that both the second quarter, this past quarter, and the current quarter, the third quarter, we'll see corporate earnings decline. So you have to have two quarters in a row where corporate earnings decline. And we haven't even seen one yet.
But it's coming.
Some people are saying we're already in it. They don't even know, but they're saying that we are. So, you know, we'll know more in the coming weeks. But the naysayers have been wrong for the last 2 years. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were wrong again.
Yeah, this whole thing about the recession, this and the recession, that. Everyone's so negative. But it's purely political. It's not economic. What drives the market is economics. If you want to know what's going to happen, you just be logical and see what's going on economically. It's axiomatic to me that electing a businessman would cause the market to do well because the business climate's improving. People were predicting the opposite in writing, on air, everything, just trying to get their faces seen. If it doesn't make sense, folks, don't pay any attention to it. That's what we do. Listen to us instead. We'll tell you the truth. That's for sure. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And we have, in this particular day, a retail-oriented trivia question, sponsored, as always, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. Everybody pretty much knows Amazon, and pretty much everybody knows that Amazon got started with books. Remember the commercials in the 90s. What started the Sears company, which is essentially dead, thanks to death by Amazon, which is sort of a roundabout way of describing the whole thing. How did Sears get started? What product? That's today's question. I'll tell you a little bit more about that as time goes on here. Well, a couple of observations on the market, having closed Friday with three new records, more than that, actually, if you look at some of the other indices. Small caps are still lagging a little bit. I'd really like to see them coming along. It might be a signal that it's time, that is a good buy point for small caps, because they have not kept up with the big ones. That is difficult to say. I'll let you know, as I always tell you, after it happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So don't take it to the bank until it's actually yours. But the market is high, and that scares a lot of people. Bullish sentiment right now is under one-third of the population. Do not mistake that for being correct. The less bullish investors are, the better off we all are, because they're not out there ruining things. This is a very, very widespread rally. It's based on solid things such as the second year of the tax cut economy. It is always going to come down to the economy, or as they said in the Clinton era, it's the economy, stupid. It has nothing to do with Trump's personality. It has nothing to do with Pelosi or anybody else. The business climate is excellent, and it's shown in a lot of the job reports. And you saw, now this is one of those times you got to be very careful with a statistic. We saw the first time unemployment claims last week drop back to 209. Remember, there was a day last week that the unemployment office was closed because of the holiday. So you always got to look at a four-day week when you're comparing it to five-day weeks, and you got to look at it with a little bit of a tempered suspicion. But let's say, for argument's sake, that 20% was missed because it was closed for a day. Well, you had 20%. You're still under the 250,000 range, and I doubt seriously it would have been anywhere near that high. But remember, under 300,000 is good, under 250,000 is great, and what's going on now is virtually unbelievable. It is just so strong out there. If you want a job, you can get one. Now, they're not going to come knocking on your door and offering it to you in most cases, unless you have a very particular skill set, but you can find one. And I am not sympathetic with anyone who walks around whining and crying because they can't get a job.
No, there are jobs available right now. It might not be your dream job, but
you can even get a job if you're over 50 nowadays.
Absolutely.
You don't even need all the requisite skills that you needed 3 years ago to get a job. Most employers are doing more training.
Yep.
They lowered their hiring standards, knowing they're going to have to train people, which ultimately is going to be very good for the employers.
Yep. I was talking with someone recently who's in the trucking industry, and they were saying how they've had to relax their standards for hiring because they just can't find people to drive warm bodies to drive trucks.
And it started about $65,000.
Yeah, and they were paying quite well. So.
Yes. It's really, really good out there. That's what's driving the stock market rally. Can it continue? Sure it can. Here's a little piece of trivia that most people don't know. Most of the money is made in a given stock after it reaches an all-time high. Not before, after. Remember when Standard Oil was broken up?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the money in Standard Oil was made after the breakup.
Yes.
AT&T broke up, and then people started to make a lot of money. It's not always what you think it is that creates wealth. And do remember this, said by a very famous financial planner who's speaking right now. The government can print money, but no government can print wealth.
This is true.
In fact, I got more on that too. I'm going to talk about inflation a little later and the purchasing power of a dollar, all those things, and how the every problem in this country can be narrowed down to 535 people. They're the ones at fault. And if you want to read all their names, just go to Senate.gov and House.gov and read the roster, and you'll find the 535 people who are ruining this country day to day. Despite all of our best efforts, we are overcoming them little by little. They just slow it way down.
Did you see that there is now one federal department is now spending over $100 billion per month? First time in history.
Defense?
Good guess, but no. It is actually the Department of Health and Human Services.
Because it encompasses Social Security and all that.
And Medicare and Medicaid. And so you can imagine what, if we went for Medicare for all, what that number would look like. We're talking $1 billion per month being spent now.
Medicare for all is Medicare for none.
I mean, the fact is, if you want to pay for it that way, we're going to pay for it one way or another. We're already paying for it. We would pay for it that way. It's just a different system. And I think it would be a worse system, but we're already paying for it. Mm-hmm. It would just be paid for a different way.
Well, I suggest everybody go to their doctor, and right before you get your examination, you announce to the doctor that you're going to pay 40% less than he charges you.
Right, and that's the big problem. A lot of doctors don't want to take Medicare because it does pay so little.
Yeah, and when you stop taking Medicare patients, no one can blame you, but we have to have doctors to take Medicare patients because there's a bunch of us who are on it.
Correct.
It's just wrong, and it's got to be fixed. Oh, enough of that. All right, headline. My favorite headlines of the week. I love doing this. On Monday, weaker growth will offset a rate cut, so sell stocks, warns Morgan Stanley. Okay. And that was Monday. What happened Friday? 3 new all-time records in stocks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gary Shilling, you hear me talk about him a lot. His recent one was the recession may have already begun. No. And so he had to follow that up. He probably heard from people like me saying, you're nuts, which he is. So his new one is Trump sowing uncertainty stokes recessions. So apparently Trump not announcing all of his plans, which is one of the things he ran on and was elected to do, apparently that is sowing the seeds of uncertainty, which is causing us to go into a recession that we're not in and can't seem to quite get underway.
Now, is he talking about an actual recession or an earnings recession?
He's talking about an actual.
Oh, okay.
With corresponding stop drops and such. Then came Wednesday. Weak U.S. economic data could trigger 10% stock plunge.
10% plunge, okay.
10% is now a plunge. We used to call it a correction.
Yeah.
It's now called a plunge, says strategist.
And we average, what, 2 a year? Is that right?
We average 1 a year over the long term.
Okay, 1 a year.
Yeah. 10% plunge. Oh, but he did say could. It could trigger a 10% stock plunge. What it can't trigger is a 10% stock plunge. It could only trigger a correction of 10% or a plunge of more than 10%. You see, you don't get to redefine economic terms just because you're a strategist. Don't you love all the people that come on as experts on television and they call themselves strategists? I wouldn't give you a nickel for any of them. Friday, I am not a fan of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies which are not money and whose value is highly volatile and based on thin air. Huh. President Donald Trump on Twitter being, once again, absolutely right.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. I mean, I do think that they have a place in society. I do not think it's an investment.
Well, unfortunately, one of the places they have in society is sheltering taxes on transactions that is upsetting the Treasury Department a lot, and they are going to be coming down on these people. They have already started. You know, I like China. China just kind of ruled out cryptocurrencies because they're going to start their own and control the market.
Shocking.
Thought you'd like that one.
Isn't that how they do everything?
Yep. And then, of course, there's this morning, ACLU joins Democrats on coaching illegal aliens to avoid ICE and deportations. And that is not fake news. Unbelievable, people. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, back to good news. Trump signs IRS redesign bill into law. That's good news and bad news. I'll tell you why. Right on the top, it's obviously very good news. On the 1st of July, he signed the Taxpayer First Act of 2019, which is a major redesign of the Internal Revenue Service. Okay, we all know it needed it. Not really a problem at all in my mind. One of the things that it is meant to do is trigger pro-taxpayer reforms. Well, that sounds good, too. So here's some of the bad stuff. The department is going to submit a plan in 2020. So they're going to think about what to maybe do down the line somewhere. This is how government redesigns something. And, of course, there is that one thing that I have complained about before that they're not doing. There is only one department of this government where the burden of proof is on the accused, and that is the Internal Revenue Service. If you're going to truly fix the IRS, you have to change that and put the burden of proof on the IRS itself. Now, I will tell you that there's a little provision in there, so after the break, I'll tell you what it is. It's kind of leading that way, but not exactly. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
And I'm Adam Banwee.
And lines are open, 904-222-TALK, 222-8255. I want to wrap up a little on this IRS bill. There's some promises in here that I find a little dubious, but and there's some things that are absolutely true. One of the promises that I find a little skeptical, I find myself a little skeptical, is the independent appeals process, which is supposed to make your fight with the IRS more independent and give you more power over them. I'll believe that when I see it. But there was a very good provision in here also. IRS, in the House bill that was originally passed, included a provision for IRS to compete with all of the other tax filing agencies to develop its own free file software. I am adamant against that. We do not need Uncle Sam competing with the private sector, especially on something that they're doing for free. We don't need it. Why pay for it? I don't want it. I don't want them that involved in people's lives to that degree. The Senate bill knocked that out of there, and the House agreed with them. It is not going to happen. We won. Absolutely, we won that one. So we will see exactly whether the promises are kept or not. The identity theft is, a lot of you know this from listening to me or from other sources, but if you live in Florida, Georgia, or Washington, D.C., you can get a personal PIN number by asking for it at IRS. In the other states, they're not there yet, so if you want one, you have to call them and explain why, and you might get one. This is supposed to include the ability for everybody to get a personal PIN. They're trying to work a little bit on the identity theft crisis that is of epic proportion in this country, like it or not. And believe me, in our day jobs, we have run across many, many people who have had identity theft problems. It is not a pretty sight. If you can hear me without going through the internet many, many states away, if you don't have an IRS personal PIN number, get one. It's such a simple thing. They will not ever send your refund to someone else because they won't have the personal PIN number. It takes a minute to do. Yeah, you got to remember it. Yeah, you got to use it to communicate with them. It's your money. If you believe it should be protected, get yourself a personal PIN number. It's just that simple. So all in all, I'm glad it happened. Probably the most negative thing now is that this will be the last time there's major IRS reform in a long time because Congress does things like that. It might be 10, 20, 30 years before they attack it again. Yeah, take what we can get.
It's something.
It is something, and we needed something badly.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reason on God's green earth that someone should fear the federal government. You ask anybody out there what they feel when they see in their mailbox the logo of the Internal Revenue Service, and I promise you that most of what you're going to hear is called fear.
It is not a happy feeling.
No, it is not. No good can come of this, as they say. Last week, we were talking about young people. There are many of them nowadays. A lot of them are getting married. A lot of them are starting families. What should a young family to be, or a young married couple or whatever, what are the things they should be thinking about? You don't really have enough money, theoretically, to do of normal financial planning thing. But you need a lot of financial planning. Well, there are ways to get it and ways not to. But you ask anybody who's 40 or above probably, and ask them, would you go back in time to a younger age? And the answer is almost always the same. Absolutely, I'd love to, under one condition. And that is that I can take with me back in time to when I was younger every single thing that I know today. Of course, A is impossible. It just gets more impossible that way. But it's interesting to me, it always has been, we've been doing this for a long time, that people don't want to go back and be younger if it involves giving up what they know, their wisdom, their learning, and so on. And I find that very comforting. In fact, the last time I got a positive response on that was from Adam before he was married. And he said, oh, hell yes, I go back to day one of college in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
And speaking of that, by the way, he went to Tulane in Louisiana.
New Orleans.
New Orleans, on, right on the big street. And they are in for a whooping.
Yeah, my friends have been sending me some pictures from there. It does not look good.
Yeah, hearts go out to them. We're both quite familiar with the city and all the wonderful things about it. All the other things, too. But, man, are they getting it. That stupid storm just sitting out there, taking its time and dumping rain. We're going to find out whether the levee people did their job this time. Unfortunately,
I don't believe they did.
I would predict that the same old thing happened. We send them billions of dollars, and they stick it in their own bank accounts. I hope I'm wrong. Time will tell. Not very much time. But anyway, back to the young people. When you're young and you're getting married and starting a family, there's very little cash flow for all the competing demands made on your life. You'd want to do so many things, and there's just not money to go around. That presents you with a planning situation and a prioritizing situation. And there are going to be conflicts that happen in your own mind, between you and your spouse. There are always going to be conflicts. And believe me, we've all been there. So what happens when all of a sudden you're facing the reality that the two of you are about to become the three of you? I think the first reaction, if I'm speaking for myself now at least, would be panic. And that's just normal. So how do you get out of it? How do you sit down and just begin this process? Well, one of the things you'll do, if you're like most people, you will say, okay, we're both working. Should we both keep working? Let's go back in the Wayback Machine through time a little bit, back up to the 50s and 60s. And if you're in my age group, you remember Leave It to Beaver, Dick Van Dyke, things like that. The normal family had a working father and a stay-at-home mother and a couple of kids and lived in middle-class America, and things were just good. And quite frankly, that's sort of how I remember growing up. It really was just kind of things were pretty good in a middle-class sort of way. We were all happy. But times change and always will. So the reasons for the women's movement are many and varied. But what it resulted in was a lot of women that might have been back then stay-at-home mothers going out, getting better educated, getting trained, and going to work. Well, that was starting to happen when Adam was very young. And we went through, Sarah and I went through a little process back then of identifying what she was actually going to bring home financially after everything. You know, back then, there were taxes. I couldn't begin to tell you today if my father ever paid an income tax in his life. I just flat out don't know. But that was earlier. But by the 70s, things were heating up, and there were a lot of people that went, a lot of women especially, that went back to work for one simple reason. There wasn't enough after-tax money to live as a single worker in the family. So we went back and said, okay, well, what is it earning us to have Sarah work? Well, we started with things like the obvious one. You got to get clothes for work. You got to drive your car and put gas in it, that sort of thing. Then there's the direct payroll taxes, Social Security on everything. And then there's the little less obvious taxes, like the fact that the second wage or salary goes on top of the first one. So you don't get the advantage of the lower tax brackets. Every single dollar starts at your marginal tax rate, meaning the taxation on the second worker is astronomical compared to the first one. Well, what we found out after all of that is that staying home would cost us net. In other words, what Sarah was bringing home, she was a teacher in a high school. It was not a terrible salary for its time in any way, shape, or form. But she was going to bring home less than $1 an hour. So we figured maybe I could work just a little bit harder and maybe pick up another dollar an hour, and that would break even. So we got to do what we wanted to do, and we did want to do it because we operated under the theory that no one could raise our kids any better than we would, and it worked that way. Well, over time, we had a lot of friends in the exact same situation, and we worked with a lot of them to do exactly the same thing. Okay, what's your job going to be? How much are you going to make? And do you know how much you're going to take home, truly? And will that fund daycare and still put money in your pocket? We normally found out that we were absolutely typical, that what the second worker was bringing home was about a dollar an hour. Well, I don't know what daycare cost back then. It's very likely that for a dollar an hour, you could pay it and bring money home. I'll finish on the other side. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. A reminder, trivia question for the week. Amazon started with books. What did Sears start with? All right, back to the young people. You might be interested, if you have young people or if you are young people, in knowing exactly what it is you're bringing home. What are you working for, in other words? Now, there can be some non-current financial reasons. There are a lot of them. If you want to get back in the workforce so you don't lose any time and you know you've got a career ahead of you, fine. Stay working. But don't do it and assume that you're bringing home all kinds of money. Prove to yourself whether you are or not, because here's the key. The cost of daycare is unbelievable these days. And Adam is nodding his head, knowing it full well. It really is. I remember my wife once got a babysitting job for 75 cents an hour when she was young, and she was thrilled because it was 50% more than anybody else was paying. Well, nowadays, you all know what babysitters get. Was it 15 bucks an hour or something?
Yeah,
like that?
Anywhere between 10 and 20.
And daycare is on top of all of that. Wow, I feel sorry for people who have to do it. Some people just don't want to be home all day and all that. And, what can I say? I'm going on. I could talk about that topic forever. I really could. All right, second big thing you got to think about, life insurance. Who, what type, how much, and all of that. Well, the first thing that Adam and I find out in our day job is generally that they either don't have any, or they don't have nearly enough,
or they have the wrong
type.
Yep.
If you are under 30 years old and you're being sold a whole life policy on the basis of, well, that's an investment, or if you're getting a universal life because, well, you can use this as a retirement fund,
no.
Run. Don't walk. Run away. Insurance means insurance, and that to me means term insurance and lots of it. What is life insurance for? Well, the second thing we find out is they usually don't have enough insurance on the stay-at-home spouse. Well, if something happens to the stay-at-home spouse, who's going to pay daycare expenses? It could cost you more than you make to do this. So you're impairing your own job and career if you don't cover it. We find, $1 million? Generally?
Yeah.
If you don't think in terms of $1 million each, if you're just young and starting a family, that is peer protection. Should something happen, that money will generate about $40,000 a year. At, we figure, 4% withdrawal rate. So nobody wants to think about it, but it can happen and it does happen. And I've talked to people many times in the office who've had it happen. So think in terms of lots and lots of life insurance, but make it the cheap kind, please. Other considerations. What expenses will our health insurance not cover? Should we keep renting or is it time to buy? Talk about conflicts of wanting to use your money. How will we be able to retire our student debt? A big and growing problem among young people. Will our current vehicles be large enough and safe enough? When should we start saving for college? Should we make a formal will? Can we continue to fund our own retirement savings? What changes are needed to our home? How will this impact our social life? Now, that is quite an exhaustive list, but it's nowhere near complete. But think of all the ways your money is tugging at you in every which direction. Do more of this, do more of that, don't skip this, don't skip that. And who are you going to talk to? Well, I have one suggestion. Pull out your yellow pages, meaning Google, and look up the certified financial planners who operate as registered investment advisors and call around. They will normally offer a one-hour consultation with absolutely no strings attached. We do it for people all the time. We've met a lot of nice young people. And then we tell them, you know, there's nothing we can help you with today. Obviously, you don't have that kind of investment that we should manage money. But we can help you get started, because what you're really doing is prioritizing, and you want somebody to look at it and see if you're missing anything that could come back and bite you at a very bad time, like the insurance problem. So the other thing I can say is that free resources abound. You're listening to one of them. If you're a young couple and you're wondering what to do, if you listen to the show or you call the show, you can ask any question you want, and it doesn't cost you a penny. You can do it on your computer. You can do it on through our website. You can do it after the fact as we podcast everything. We also, on our website, VanWeFinancial.com, we'll put all of our blogs on each week. And we have, what else? We got all the radio shows that are archived. And we take, Jenna's very nice. She takes out the commercials for you, so you can go buzz right through it. But don't think that you can't see a planner and discuss these things. You can't be expected to know everything about what you're getting into when you're just getting into it. So just a little advice. Right, let's go down the other path. One of the things that was in the wrap for the week was a spike in the inflation rate. Now, we don't hear much about inflation, do we? Nobody talks about it.
We sure don't. And that some of that is because it hasn't been that bad, and some of it is because they just flat out lie to you about it.
The government lies?
Correct. And they have a very good reason to.
Who knew?
Yeah.
There's one guy who doesn't lie. His name is Ed Butowski. You don't have to remember that, although he is a fascinating man from a fascinating family, but that is irrelevant at the moment. Butowski was as upset with the way inflation is reported by the government as Adam and I have been forever. But he did something about it. He created something called the Chapwood Index, Chapwood index.com, and you can go see it. Now, what he does that's different than what other people do, for the top 50 cities in the country, he has a market basket full of all kinds of goods, and he twice a year surveys the cost of those things, and he doesn't change it. It's the same product. What did it cost 6 months ago? What does it cost now? What did it cost a year ago? Aggregates all of those, and he comes up with a very, very clear picture of inflation for people who actually have to live normal lives. For the last year, ended last December, his numbers are out now, Jacksonville's actual rate of inflation was 8.0. Our five-year average was 8.0. Amazing. Now, if that sounds horrible to you, then you should be very grateful you don't live in Oakland, where the rate last year was 13.4%, and the five-year is 13.1%. It's out there. Don't think it's just you. Good morning, David.
Oh, yeah, morning. I have been studying some of the data that are coming out of both Steve Mnuchin. You might have seen the article yesterday where Steve Mnuchin, of course, is the Treasury Secretary, and he says that America is going to run out of money in 2 months.
Yep, he's absolutely right.
Absolutely stupid, man. I mean, how in the world can America run out of money?
But, it's not authorized by Congress to be spent, so they can't spend it in theory.
Right, yeah, and then the next layer is the Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, who Well, if you know both his record and Mnuchin's record, they're famous for cooking books. Wilbur Ross is called the king of bankruptcies. And so his whole technique for the last 50 years has been to pick a company, find a way to bankrupt it, and then he'll swoop in like a vulture and buy up everything at 2 cents on the dollar. So I'm just wondering, is there any way of determining whether they're trying to do that to America? Sell out America and have then their vultures will buy up America at 2 cents on the dollar?
Can anyone prove that? No. No one can prove that until after the fact. I certainly would not ascribe those motives to them, at least not in public. I don't know. Never really gave it that much thought.
Well, they're doing it in Puerto Rico, for example.
Oh, yeah. Well, Puerto Rico got bailed up by you-know-who even after the promises. So did Fannie Mae. So did Freddie Mac. They're not going to bail out anybody, right? And then once something happens, they bail them out. So I would call it not uninteresting, but it's basically irrelevant because you know what's going to happen. We're going to print more money, and that's it.
That's called hyperinflation.
I'm going to talk about this next week. Tune in if you can. I love this topic, and there's more to be said on this. But right now, I got to run. Thank you. Before the lights go out, so to speak, the Sears company was originally called the RW, I believe, Sears Watch Company in Minneapolis. They did pretty well until recently. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.